is The Buzz 24/7 at morningbuzz.com.
This is unbelievable.
Now that's what's up.
Well, it's here. Before you know it, Celtics season is starting here.
Coming up
pretty soon, right?
Yeah, this weekend, or they get preseason home games on Saturday and Sunday.
October 22nd, New York Knicks at the TD Garden.
That's pretty sweet, pretty sweet, pretty sweet, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going to be...
Thank you. We're going to be hooking up with Chad Finn, editor of the new book, The Boston Globe's Story of the Celtics, 1946 to present. So we're gonna be dialing him up here. Let me just pull a couple of buttons here, and he should be here.
Dialing him up. Tell you what,
kind of angry to be honest with you about the Boston Celtics.
Hello.
Is this Chad?
How's it going?
Good. Chad, go ahead. Kelly.
Hello, Chad Finn. My name is Kelly Brown. We're here with Greg, Laura, Kayla, also Roadkill, and we're all Celtics fans, except for Roadkill.
He's not a sports guy.
Yeah. You think Chad went, that guy named Roadkill is not a basketball guy. I'm thinking he did. Chad,
I know you guys.
We were just talking about opening night. Yeah, the world champion Boston Celtics, Boston Globe, story of the Celtics, 1946 to present. So, yeah, you're a local guy, right? Where are you
out
of?
Main,
yeah, he's got a main thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I live up in Wells.
Nice.
And commute down, for games. But I lived in Concord for 9 years and Dover for a little while. So, familiar with New Hampshire.
You want to head down to the Wells Steakhouse? We'll grab a sirloin.
The steakhouse?
That's kick-ass. Yeah. That's pretty good.
I used to work at the Nautical Mile right up the road.
It sounds like a great idea. And, Wells, of course, in the news with Louis Tiant, also lived in Wells, and he was often seen around the area, and people loved him. But great to have you on with us here and getting ready for the Celtics season again. Now, what put you in the position? Like what made you go, all right, let's do an updated version of the entire history of the Boston Celtics. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, my editor was foolish enough to ask me to do it.
Yeah.
You can't say no to that.
Right.
But, we did one for the Red Sox back in about a year and a half ago, the entire Red Sox history. And as old as the Red Sox are, they started in 1901. The Globe had been around about 45 years to that point. So everything in Sox history was covered. We did that book. It did pretty well, and they decided to do one for the Celtics and maybe for the other teams as well. So
that's
privilege
cool.
for me, for sure.
Yeah,
Chad. I know the Celtics started in 1946, but really, I mean, they didn't really start. The most important maybe thing that happened was when Walter Brown hired Red in 1950.
Yeah, Walter Brown hired Red. It's so fun. That was the stuff I didn't really know about. You heard the mythology of how Red got here and Bob Cousy and Bill Russell and all that. It was really fun to go back and look at what it was like in real time. I think a lot of Celtics fans know this, but, Red came in, was very decisive right away, but he also needed a lot of luck. He didn't want Bob Cousy at all. He called him the local yokel from Holy Cross. And they got stuck with him.
Yeah,
they got him in a dispersal draft and got stuck with him as the last pick. And it just goes to show that you need a lot of luck along with genius, I think, along the way.
Now, did you compile a bunch of the writings of some of the Boston Globe's, most famous reporters and stories they've done through the years? Is that part of the book?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's a compilation of the best writing telling the entire story of the history. So it's a chronology. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the book, we have retrospectives or anniversaries of things, look back on Bill Russell after 10 years after he retired, 1979. I did an oral history of Larry Bird's 60-point game that's in there, things like that.
Yeah.
But it basically, if you're reading the 80s, you're reading what Bob Ryan or Lee Montfield, Dan Shaughnessy, Jackie McMullen wrote at that time, which is probably why that chapter is twice as long as any other in the book.
When you go through a project like this, right, even if you're a lifelong fan, like I think I was a huge Celtics fan early on, the Dave Cowens, JoJo White, John Havlicek days, the Larry Bird days. Then I kind of fell away from basketball. And then, and we've been right back in it the last few years. My wife is a huge fan. So but when you go through all of the history of this, what did you come away with, Chad, that either you have a much greater appreciation for when it comes to the Celtics. Who maybe or what about that history do you have a newfound appreciation for that maybe you didn't have before?
That basically Red just wanted to clobber every team that he played, and it didn't matter whether his players were black, white, or you know, some other race. I mean, right. the Celtics had the first black head coach. They had the first black starting five. They drafted the first black player, Chuck Cooper. He just wanted to kill everybody. And race obviously was an enormous issue for a long, long time, generations in Boston. But for the Celtics, and when Red was running the show, as he pretty much did their entire history until Rick Pitino got here, it was just about winning basketball games.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Go ahead, Kelly.
One of the worst, I mean, there's so many good times, but selfishly, sometimes I can't help thinking about, Chad, what would have happened had Len Bias not died a couple of days after the draft. That just was, you know, obviously for the Bias family, terrible, but for the Celtics, just turned it around.
Yeah, I mean, it changed history, right? And then and Reggie Lewis dying in 1993, they had that huge drought from the 86 championship until Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, that group won in 2008. And drought may never have happened if Len Bias had kept his nose clean and Reggie Lewis had not had the heart issues that he had or had survived. And really two devastating losses. Their first round picks in 1986 and 87, incredibly athletic players. And everybody talks about Len Bias because he went head to head with Michael Jordan in college and more than held his own. Mike Krzyzewski says they're the two best players that ever played against Duke. But to me, Reggie is the bigger loss because you already knew he was great. He was already the Celtics captain. He was the next guy. And just to lose him at age 27 was crushing.
Chad Finn, editor of the new book, The Boston Globe, Story of the Celtics, 1946 to Present. Kayla, what do you got?
Well, yeah, and I came in later on, so I missed the Larry era, or I wasn't paying much attention at the time because I was younger. So that Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker, and then KG, like that was my run with the Celtics. I obviously know the history. I have been very lucky, but I know. But I've always wondered, with the teams, like how well the team got along personally affected how they actually played on the court?
That's a good question because it can go both ways. You can hate who you're playing with and you can be an absolutely dynamic basketball team. I think the Chicago Bulls with Jordan were like that, where, you know, he was basically a misanthrope with his teammates and yet they have an argument as the greatest team of all time. It's 86 Celtics to me, but Jordan's Bulls teams are one of them is up there anyway. But this particular year, this past year, it was the most unified team I've ever seen. I've never seen anything like it where the kids were around all the time. The families were really involved with everything. And I think one of the most satisfying things in sports is when you watch people grow up and they finally achieve what you hope they would achieve. Mm-hmm. That happened with Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum this year, and it happened with a team that was really unified around them. And that 24 Celtics team was probably my favorite championship team I've covered in my 20 years in Boston.
Well, you go to the game, right, and JT's got his kid out there with him, doing warm-ups and stuff like that. And that kind of leads me to, bringing up this current team, the current world champions. They kind of piss me off, to be honest with you. They're not the team. I love the team. I agree with everything you just said, Chad. But how, in a city that is built on tradition, ownership, tradition, caring about the fans, caring about the franchise, how do you win the championship and then throw the team on the auction block? You know what I mean? How do you put the team up for sale like 7 minutes after the championship was won? I get that it's a business.
That's not the team, that's the business guys.
I agree. I want it to be more than business, but it's not. And I know that's old school and it's unrealistic, but you get where I'm coming from on that?
I do, and I think Whit Grousbeck would probably agree with you because I don't really believe he wants to sell the team. It seems like his dad, who's the Irving, who's the money guy and a brilliant business mind, made all his money in cable television, decided this was the time to sell, to set up the family for, $5 billion or whatever the windfall is going to be when they sell the team. But I think if you asked Wick, shot up a truth serum, he would say he would keep this team for the rest of his life.
The city's built on that, right? The greatest teams in their respective times is kind of built on that thing of tradition. And when they announced the sale, I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
The salaries are pretty big.
No, I know. I know that. Yeah. I know. I mean, I recognize the world we live in. Go ahead, Kelly.
Chad, was Red Auerbach really talked out of taking the Knicks job in the 70s by a taxi driver?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a taxi driver, but he had one foot in Manhattan there because he was pissed off at Celtics ownership, who had made a trade without telling him. They traded for Bob McAdoo and gave up a couple of first-round picks, and Red went ballistic. And yeah, his heart was with the Celtics, of course, but when he had lost, when his John White Brown, who was married to Phyllis George, who was the owner of the Celtics in the 70s, started meddling in personnel moves, Red had almost had enough. But yeah, he got talked out of it by somebody, and I'll buy the taxi driver story.
He's in on it. Good, Kay.
And just sort of transitioning back to my time.
Yeah.
The KG trade for me was huge. Like, that was the turning point for us. We've been getting there, getting close, but then Kevin Garnett coming in, that happening, and then even when they then traded KG and Paul for all of those trades, went to Jalen, they got Jason out of that. How big a deal was that?
Well, that's why I think Danny Ainge's number ought to be retired.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He started on two of the championship teams in the 80s and was on the 86 team that, like I said, I think is the best ever. But he was an extraordinary executive. You look at just getting KG in here. Paul Pierce wanted out at that point in time. Mm-hmm. The team was terrible in 2006. They thought they were going to get Kevin Durant or Greg Oden in the draft. I totally believe Danny was going to draft Durant. That's who he was following. And they ping pong balls don't cooperate, so he reverses course, makes that trade for Garnett. He told me they almost traded Pierce to Minnesota and blew the whole thing up. Danny told me that once. But instead, they went out and got Garnett and Ray Allen and built an instant championship team. And then 6 years later, when they broke that up, he makes that trade with the Nets that ends up with them getting Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum as draft picks. It's a remarkable run through really two different eras of Celtics, Celtics teams that Danny put together.
When you go through the book and you're compiling all the articles and you're reading all the history of it and stuff like that, what did you learn? Was there anything you learned that surprised you about a coach, about one of the coaches that we've had?
Rick Pitino was as big a weasel as I thought he was at the time.
I've always wondered.
I liked him until I read more and more about him. Mm.
Why do you say that, Chad?
Yeah, hell of a college coach. Mm. Yeah, he was power mad, and you know, he ran Red out as president, and he kind of built the Celtics team as one based on the guys he knew from coaching in college at Kentucky. So he's clearing out these guys like Rick Fox and David Wesley, decent NBA players, to bring in like Travis Knight, who's a backup center, but he was familiar with him from UConn, and overpaying him and just having no patience. And high point of Pitino's tenure was his first game when they beat the Bulls to open the 97 season. And it was all downhill from there. It was a disaster, basically, not because he wasn't a smart basketball guy, but just a massive ego got in the way of everything.
I love that, you know, that was in the time when I kind of wasn't really as into it. And the only thing the thing I know about him the most is Larry Bird's not going to walk through that door. That's, I mean, when you're known for something you said in the locker room, that's not good. You know what I mean? That's not good. How do you look, like, going into this new season, which is, of course, just about to start, you know, it's hard to not feel pretty good about it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty loaded, and it looks like some of the guys who were role players last year are even a little bit better now. Peyton Pritchard looks, more ready to contribute all around. Sam Hauser looks a little bit better. One of the things that's underrated about Tatum and Brown is every year they come back with something new added to their game. They really work at it. Jalen looks like he's put on 15 pounds of muscle. And so they have to be the heavy favorite now. You need breaks along the way. You need good luck. Like, a lot of guys on teams they played in the playoffs last year were injured, and they got some breaks that way. And you need to stay healthy yourself. And they were, other than Porzingis getting knocked out in the playoffs, they were a really healthy team last year. If they can replicate that this year and not lose too many guys to, you know, injury along the way for any length of time, I could see them winning another one.
There's so many. I mean, look, I mean, there's so many great players on the team that you just kind of fell in love with, you know, Brown and Tatum, obviously. I'm a big Jaylen Brown guy, and I was all season long. But, God, I don't know how you – Derek White, are you kidding me? Was there a bigger clutch guy? I mean, Jesus, it was just so exciting. He was, you know, Scal is on with us every week, and he's talking about, I wish I had a team full of Derek Whites because of the way he plays the game. Amazing to watch him.
There are basically, like, three guys in the league that are just, like, ultimate glue guys that make everybody around them better and do whatever you need. And Celtics have two of them. They have Derek White and Drew Holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was, to me, was the biggest difference with last year's team, why they got over the hump, where in the past they couldn't quite do it, you know, losing in the finals in 22 and then getting knocked out by the Heat in 23, was because Tatum and Brown didn't really trust their teammates. And when you're out there with Derek White, who was really a full-time starter for the first time last year, and Drew Holiday, who's just a winning player, who doesn't care about his own numbers, Tatum and Brown trusted those guys more, and that just made them more powerful and a better team.
Roadkill, you got any questions for the South?
I mean, you guys have done a great job covering everything.
What's the Halloween video?
Oh, that's funny. The book is called The Boston Globe, Story of the Celtics, 1946 to Present. If you're anybody in your family is a Celtics fan, if you're a Celtics fan, it makes for a great read, makes for a great gift, too. I mean, Christmas is coming. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the kind of gifts
shopping.
that basketball fans love. But available everywhere, Chad? I got to trust that it's available everywhere.
Available everywhere.
Nice.
That's the way we like it.
Nice. All right, brother. Well, listen, enjoy. I'll see you at the Wells Steakhouse.
Yeah.
All right. We'll cut up a ribeye or two. And thanks for coming on with us today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, that sounds like a plan. I'll see you there.
All right, buddy.
See
thanks, Chad.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It. Take care. That's...
Kay, have you started watching Starting Five?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
Is that a series?
A Netflix?
Yeah.
It's new.
LeBron.
It's LeBron, Tatum.
Who else? Yeah. A guy from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Ant.
Ant-Man.
There's like five, but it's going to be good.
Okay. Let me know.
Jimmy Butler.
Okay. I've had my fill of LeBron. I'm not interested in LeBron.
Well, this is about four other people, too.
Yeah, I know, but it's okay.
Follows him through the entire season.
Maybe
guess what?
Like LeBron.
Guess what's going to happen at the last episode?
Yeah, they win.
Guess who wins?
Celtics win.
We do.
Okay. So guess what? Starting five? Well, guess what? Who's the starting number one?
I didn't know it was about last year.
Yes.
I thought it was about moving forward.
No, it followed them all last year. Chronologically.
I appreciate that, you know, him and Bronny got to play the first father-son in a game together. I think that's pretty cool.
But if the kid plays in a real game, it ain't right because he's not good enough, right?
Yeah, right. That's the argument right there. I don't like it when star players got to dictate everything that happens on a team.
I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah, I just don't like it. I've never liked it, you know, so. But we live in a different world today, so. Don't sell the freaking Celtics. God's sake. How much
it's
money
dead.
Do you
it's
need?
It's dead.
Wick doesn't want to sell.
I know. You're right.
God. All right. Anyway, Scotty, great questions.
Yeah, that was well done.
Really good.
You guys, and you know what? Perfect on your time.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It was like me in a wrestling interview.
What did you get to do during that time?
I did. I watched some stuff on
there were some trailers.
Oh, by the way.
Did you get any?
Kayla?
Yeah, good question. Right. He wasn't even paying attention that he couldn't get the.
I don't have that screen.
Okay.
Shut up.
I can make it so you have that screen after 10 o'clock if you'd
like.
Shut up! He turns into an animal. All right, well, enjoy the rest of the day, everybody. That's cool. He's a Wells guy.
That is cool.
Nice little town. We should have invited him to Kittery.
I know. I should have. Shoot. Hey, come to Kittery, bud, if you listen back to your interview.
Dude, Congdon Donuts.
Congdon's.
Well,
which is right next to the Nautical Mile, which is where I'd work.
Yeah.
So I'd open the place, walk over to Congdon's, get my breakfast sandwich and my coffee, and walk right back over.
Those are real donuts, man. Mm-hmm. Real donuts.
Those biscuits.
Oh, my God. Forget about it. So, anyway.
Forget about it.
All right. Well, enjoy the day, everybody. We will see you tomorrow.